This podcast is made possible by Optimizely. Optimizely is the leader in progressive delivery and experimentation. Our platform includes feature flagging, progressive rollouts, and A/B testing. We help your teams release software quickly, then test and learn in production before rolling out to all users. Using the Optimizely full stack platform puts product managers at the center of the product development process, allowing you to de-risk big ideas, make bold bets, and build better products.
Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
Today, I would like to talk to you guys about how to focus on metrics which matter. And the reason why I chose this topic is because metrics is a big deal. And that's how you measure success for a lot of things, not just limited to your product, but as a product manager, it's also about how you're performing. So hopefully I'll be able to help you guys out, learn more about this. But before that, a little bit about myself. Who am I? So I'm a lifelong traveler. I grew up as a Navy brat back in India, moving around all over the place. And I came here for grad school a few years ago. So been all over the US as well now. But besides that, for the longest time, I was a developer at AT&T doing iOS development and then Android development for their developer program. And eventually, over the years, I took upon as the product manager for this developer program as well. And after I felt that I needed, you know, a more challenging role, I ended up at T-Mobile in March of this year. So I've been having a great time in Seattle so far, and especially at T-Mobile, because we're working on a lot of cool stuff. So hopefully I'll be able to share more about that in the next year if you guys come back. All right, so just a quick brief of what we will be talking about today. So first of all, of course, what are KPIs or metrics? Because these words are thrown around a lot, but there's slight nuances about understanding what they actually mean and how you can use them to, you know, make better business decisions. We would also look at how you can choose the right product metrics for your product. So working through some of the frameworks and looking at some examples of those metrics. And then finally, it's driving business decisions using these metrics and following them. I think of myself more as a circus clown who has a lot of hats, and I keep switching up between them. But more often than not, most of the product managers, it depends on the breadth and width of what kind of experience you're coming in from. So you'll notice, you know, just amongst yourselves, being product managers and meeting other product managers, that there's no one way to go about being a product manager. But most common components of, you know, the skills that these product managers have or the backgrounds they have are having maybe a technology background. So for example, for myself, I came in with a STEM degree as a developer. And then you also have some business folks, you know, people who went through MBAs or did finance, and they understand more about the business side of things and felt like they would be much better at being product managers. And you also have a lot of people who come in as UX folks, right? So having that user experience, they are much closer to how customers feel and think. So that's actually one of the best product managers that I know came in from UX, and they're brilliant. So, but some of the common things all of these various kinds of product managers do is, you know, ideate, prioritize, persuade, and execute. So basically, during the ideation process, you're coming up with the ideas, you're working with stakeholders, you're researching, and figuring out what you're building and why you're building it. Same goes for prioritization. you know, knowing how important a feature or a product is to your customers as well as your business stakeholders is super important, and product managers, you know, always have to be on their tiptoes about how they, you know, how fast they understand that and start working on it. Persuasion, so communication, is one of the biggest skills that I suggest everyone should work on. So, like, I have been a product manager for a few years now, but that's one thing that I can always improve upon just because of the variety of personalities that you work with. And finally, execution. So that's the fun part where you get the ball rolling. However, in all of these steps, and there's obviously a lot more, the biggest common denominator, in my opinion, is data. So you can use that data or information to drive all these steps that could make you a better product manager. And that's the reason why we're gonna work on that. All right, so as I said before, you know, you hear the words measure, you hear the word metric or KPI, but what exactly are they? So a measure is, you know, how it sounds like, a measurement. It's a very fundamental unit-specific term. So you think of that as numbers or counts. So you can measure, for example, the number of times I breathe. That's a count, right? That's a measure. However, a metric, on the other hand, is more quantitative. So number of breaths per minute that I'm taking, that's a measure of that metric. On the other hand, a KPI, or a key performance indicator, is a measurable value that demonstrates how effectively the company achieves its objectives. So in this example that we've been using, a KPI would be, you know, doing a comparison between the number of breaths I took this minute versus the number of breaths I took in the last minute, and doing an analysis of whether it went up, it went down, and doing a cause analysis on that. So, but, you know, who cares about these numbers? So in any company, in any organization, there's a lot of stakeholders that you will work with as product managers. The biggest ones would be your business stakeholders, but the things that they care about and you care about, or the sales team cares about, are going to be different. So for example, the business stakeholders, bless you, would probably care more about what value is your product bringing to the business. So, you know, for example, they care about the revenue, they care about the net promoter score for the organization and the product, churn rate or gross margins. Sales team, on the other hand, they like talking about conversions and funnels and churn. So between these two, or, you know, the various stakeholders, it's very important for you to focus on what you control. So in, you know, depending on an organization and how it's distributed or organized, different business units are responsible for different metrics, and you don't always control those metrics. So for example, if sales and marketing is working on customer acquisition costs, they will have a lot more background in it. So I would suggest, you know, focusing on the metrics that you do control or that affect your product directly. Which brings me to the product team, which is you and the people that you work with on a day-to-day basis to execute your product. So for you and your product team, I guess some of the biggest problems you'd be solving are for your customers, and how you measure it is, A, are you solving that customer problem, and B, are your customers satisfied with it? So usually this follows like a path of, you know, asking questions like, how often is a feature that you created being used? Are the same people using the same pathways to go to your feature, or are there, you know, gaps in how they would use the feature or a product? Which features are users engaging with the most? And these questions, determining what questions to ask, helps you kind of determine not only how your product is doing, but how you can improve upon it, how you can iterate. So be smart. Okay, so before I go to the be smart, because you're all very smart people, let's look at what OKRs are. So OKR, or objectives and key results, is a framework that I suggest, you know, in especially new product managers use, because once you have been in the process for a while, people tend to develop their own frameworks and figure out what works for them. However, this is a great, very simple framework that you can get started with. So very simply, in an OKR, you have an objective and a key result. An objective tells you what needs to be achieved. It will have a set of metrics that help you measure whether or not you achieved that objective. And those would be your key results, or KPIs. These KPIs determine the factors which are needed for success in your organization. So your objectives are going to be qualitative or strategic. They also focus more on significant and action-oriented steps that a company can take. On the other hand, the key results, they measure the how and the numeric quantitative data behind it. They should be succinct, specific, and measurable. And we'll deep dive into those a little bit more during this presentation. So let's say you have an objective about, you know, new customer acquisition. You want to measure that. That's your objective. So what kind of key results would you be looking at? An example would be, did you grow or did you improve upon your new customer acquisition by 50% at the end of Q2 versus what you had at the end of Q1? Another example would be, you know, increasing the gross profit margin by 30% for the end of the year. In this case, your KPI, or the key result that tells you whether or not you achieved that, is the gross profit margin. So those are some examples of objectives and key results which could help you determine the right KPIs that you can use to measure your success. How about being smart? So metrics, as I said earlier, are just numbers. They are objective in the sense that they don't change based on our behavior or our goals. A number will stay the same number, you know, in a silo, unless you change anything about it. Goals and objectives, on the other hand, are SMART, because they're not metrics. So what does SMART stand for? Specific. So you need to have clarity about what exactly do you want to achieve when you're thinking about metrics. What is the objective behind them? What is the goal that you want to achieve using those numbers? They should be measurable. Of course, if you can identify, you know, how you have done in your goal, or like how you've achieved your goal, that is key to measuring performance. Achievable. Is your goal actually attainable? I would love to make, you know, T-Mobile free for all my customers because they love us, but that's not really attainable. I know John Leisure would be very happy with it, but customer satisfaction only drives a company so far. Relevant. So relevancy is slightly objective, but, you know, one way to look at it is, does an objective or a goal align with where you see the product going and how it can help you achieve the company's goals? Because usually when you're, you know, a strategic and visionary product manager, you're not only looking at your product performance in a silo, you're looking at how it will help your company grow, improve, maybe improve customer satisfaction. So it all kind of aligns. And the last thing is time-bound or sandboxed, because you can't have goals which, you know, have an infinite timeline, because that doesn't really help you make better business decisions. So when you look at metrics, definitely go specific, have measurable metrics. Hopefully they're achievable. If not, what needs to change? They should be relevant to what you're doing, and they should be time bound so that you have an idea when you are expecting to deliver that goal. What are the key milestones? How you can put those milestones on a roadmap and measure your performance along the way. With big data comes big responsibility, and how to avoid analysis paralysis. So as I said before, metrics are huge. Nowadays, the problem isn't how to get data. We have more data available than what we can, you know, imagine to do with it. So it becomes very important to not fall into the problem of analysis paralysis, where you're paralyzed by the amount of data you have, and how we can, you know, kind of overcome that. So again, as I mentioned earlier, I really like frameworks, and I'm going to again discuss a few frameworks which are very widely used. There's a lot of really great information about them online, but we'll look at some of the key salient features of them shortly. So pirates or hearts? Let's look at that. So the pirate metrics are the A-A-R-R-R, so it goes R, that's why we're the pirate. So when you look at the pirate metrics, starting with acquisition, that strives to answer questions about where are you acquiring your customers? Is it through a Google Play Store download? Is it through a link that customers click from a newsletter you mailed out to them? Is it from social media campaigns, right? So where do the customers actually reach into your product? Moving on, once you have acquired these customers, you want to activate them in your ecosystem. You want to see how is the customer doing after they are inside your product, after they're using your product for the first time. Now, you know, you have acquired customers, you have activated them, and they had a great experience, but how do you retain them? Retention deals with how many customers come back and use your product again and again, because that's how you drive success. That's how you drive, you know, views to your content page. That's how you drive revenue from a SaaS model product. Which brings us to the question of revenue. How do you increase the revenue for your product? Because the bottom line, as I said earlier, is profits. Everyone loves profits. And referral. How do you turn your existing customers into advocates? And how you go from, you know, being a great product that's loved by people individually versus a product that everyone talks about and loves. So we'll kind of work through that the pirate metrics using an example of Tinder. Have you guys used it? I was there once. All right, so let's start with acquisition. So how did you get into the Tinder app? Did you download it from somewhere? Did you see an ad in Facebook or Instagram? Or did a search for it? You were like, hey, I want to meet new people. How do I do that? So let's use the example of, you know, downloading the application. If you download the app, there's, again, going to be a few metrics that you can use to measure this acquisition piece. Some examples would be number of downloads, number of registrations. So after downloading, how many users actually registered? And this is also a good way of identifying where your customers drop off. You know, looking at the onboarding flow, how many of them were able to finish that, then move on to the next step. So now you have downloaded the app, you have registered, and now you're ready to actually use it. Which brings you to activation, right? What happens after the user has registered? We want them to have an aha moment. We want them to, you know, feel great about this application and keep coming back to it. But in our example, what's the main goal of using Tinder for people? To find a partner, right? The reasonings or the objectives behind them could be different. It could be for a one-night stand or a long-term relationship. In some cases, people claim it's just to be friends. However, once you have matched with someone, the first thing you would do is chat, right? You swipe, you've matched, and you see this person that you think is interesting, you are interested in them, and they are interested back. So you want to create a dialogue. So that is the first key step where, in this example, you would measure that activation metric. And how can you do that? Well, again, we go through the questions that you want to answer. What do we want to measure? Maybe the number of matches the user had, or the number of times they created dialogues with people. An example of, you know, improvement you can do when it comes to that is maybe suggesting, hey, you should send the first message. Maybe make it easier, give them the option of sending a GIF or a sticker. I talk in memes, that might help. Or how people communicate after that mutual match. So now you have acquired your customer, you have activated them, but how do you get revenue from these customers, especially in a freemium model? So if you have not used Tinder, it is a freemium model, which means you can use a lot of the features for free, but if you wanted additional proposals or features or specialty, you know, nooks and crannies of the app, you can pay for it as a subscription. But moving on, retention. So you, after acquiring them, how does Tinder make sure that you're going to keep coming back, right? So some of the things that they do is, hey, the hot singles in your area, but with a nicer emoji game there. So some of the messages they send out obviously are, you know, the timing of when you're getting your matches, because things like that are what trigger people to go back to the application. They made it super easy to just click on a push notification and it pulls up your matches. So making it super easy for your customers to get in there and keep using your app is crucial. So in this case, you know, what are the things that you can measure to, you know, quantify your retention? How many people have subscribed and then switched on their push notifications? And then how many people are actually clicking through these applications, push notifications, pulling up your application and taking an action? An example of the retention rate would be, you know, how many people returned on the first day after having registered the app, and then a week later and a month later. So this gives you an average of how you're doing in terms of retention, how many users are coming back and how frequently. So, and the other thing that you could measure is stickiness. How frequently do they use it? How many days a week they use it? So for example, if 20% of the people are using the application 5 days a week, that's great. The other example would be, you know, for stickiness, if you have 10,000 daily users out of the 20,000 monthly users of your application, you're already at 50% stickiness. You have reliable 50% customers who keep coming back to your application. But then that brings us to the question of monetization. How do we monetize them? That's where we move on to revenue. So Tinder, as I mentioned earlier, offers the basic functionality for free, but for generating revenue, they also offer extra proposals. So for example, you accidentally swiped left on someone that you liked and wanted to swipe right, but you can't go back unless you pay for their subscription model. If you wanted to hide your age, that is an option. Or maybe if you travel often, you can change the settings, your location settings and ranges. In this case, for your revenue, some of the key metrics a product manager and the sales team would look for is average revenue per user. So average revenue of all the users that you have in your application. But remember, this is a freemium model, so you have some special customers who are also paying for it. So average revenue per paying users, or ARPPU, is another metric you can look at. So the ARPU, or the average revenue per user, can be calculated by dividing the lifetime revenue of your application, so however revenue you have made so far, divided by the number of users you have. So for example, if you if your app makes $2,000 in 1 month, and you've had 2,000 users total, you are you're generating $1 per user, or $1 ARPU. And that's like one way of quantifying those users in a way that makes sense, and it helps you basically see where you want to be, where you are, and then start identifying the actions and the steps you can take to increase that number. All right, and the last thing is referral. Word of mouth has been the biggest referral thing since, you know, the dawn of time, since the grandmas started talking about things and passing along grandmas or old wives' tales. But nowadays, you have so many opportunities to actually get your customers who love you, who love your product, to start referring. And one of the first, Dropbox models, which helped me, for example, get started with it, was their referral bonus. So their referral program was actually one of the main drivers of their initial growth. And how you can measure that referral. So there's two key indicators here. One is called the NPS, or the Net Promoter Score. Basically, it's a measure or an index between negative 100 and a positive 100, and it measures how willing are your customers to recommend your product. It lets you know how satisfied they are and how loyal are they to your brand. And the second thing is virality, so the viral coefficient. One person talking to another person is already, you know, two people that you can have on your app. But as you increase the number of people being referred by each individual, you can see that you have a viral coefficient on exponential growth. I forgot the word exponential. But yeah, so we always strive for exponential growth, but this is a great area where marketers and campaigners could be crucial. You know, they could help you come up with ideas of how you can engage your customers, especially the ones who are great promoters of your application, and drive that virality complex. So that was the pirate metrics. The other framework that is very popular is the heart metric framework. And this was developed by Google. You know, they have so much data and they have done great things with it. So the step one in this framework is identifying or setting your goals. So using this example, you know, you want to measure the happiness of your customers. The goal in this case is that your users should find the app fun. They should love your application. The second step in this case would be defining the signals. So you have identified the goal of making your customers happy, but how do you break it down? What steps would you take to start measuring how happy they are? Some examples would be, are they responding to surveys? For example, Apptentive is a great tool which a lot of apps have these days, which throws a love dialogue depending on how good of a user you are, in terms of, you know, how frequently you use it, which feature you're using. And that allows someone like me as a product manager to see what my customers feel about it. They can give us direct feedback. They can give us ratings. So yeah, again, leaving 5-star ratings. Are they, you know, signaling that they like the application? And the last one is metrics. So how do you quantify the results that you got from your surveys in a measurable way? You can look at the customer satisfaction rating. Did they all give you 5 stars in customer satisfaction? If not, did they leave feedback? Or were you able to identify what could have led for them to not be satisfied with your product? Net promoter score, again, are they willing to, you know, show their faith in your brand, in your product, and talk to their friends about it, post on social media about it? So in the heart framework, there's a few key things that you are concerned with. First of all, happiness. You want to start with your customer's happiness, because in my opinion, the biggest thing we do is solve customer problems. And if you solve those problems, they hopefully will be happy. The next thing you look at is engagement. So how happy and engaged are your customers? And again, you can look into it in deep, in more depth. I will provide references to this particular model and framework. But going down the list, you have adoption. So when you add new features, are users adopting it? How do you identify features that you want to add and increase that adoption? You know, after downloading the app, how many users are signing up for the account? Is something happening between them downloading and signing up? Maybe your onboarding flow or your sign-up form is too long or complicated, or cut off somewhere or frozen. So just between those two steps, there's an issue, right? So that will affect your adoption. Feature adoption rate. So again, going back to the features, you've added a feature. Are customers even using that? Has it been adopted? If not, is it because, you know, it's way down, you have to scroll a lot to get to that feature? Or maybe you haven't publicized it enough that customers know that it even exists. Would that be fixed? Or is that something that could be fixed by rearranging how you have features laid out or how your application functions? Retention. Again, these buckets are very, very similar to various frameworks, including the Pirate framework that we looked at. The only difference is in how they arrange the priority of what they want out of their metrics. So retention, again, how many times are your users coming back and how many users are coming back to your application? And the last one is task success. Are your users able to use the product successfully and complete each task without running into problems? Are there too many crashes or app freezes? How quickly does the content render on your application? So those are some examples of the metrics that you can, you know, kind of use this framework for and identify. All right, now we're moving on to the slightly fun part, data-driven product management. So nowadays, you know, as I said earlier, we have a lot of data, but how do we make business decisions off of that? And we'll look at that now. So, you know, decisions. We make a lot of decisions every single day in personal as well as our professional lives. So it's very important for us to have the right level of depth into how, you know, in the weeds do we want to get with our data. So an example would be putting all the features that you want and doing an analysis of what value do they bring to you across these two axes. How easy is it to change that metric? How hard is it? And what's the cost? So if it involves, you know, a lot of data involvement prior to launch, you're looking at something which is very difficult to change and it will cost not as much money. However, if you look at data embedded at later stages, so once your application has been created, making changes to how your data is laid out and how you're using it is going to get more expensive and more difficult. So making those decisions about the depth of your data is also crucial. How data-driven should my decision be? Are you using your data to support what you want to do? Or what you're doing, is that supported by the data that you have? It sounds like the same thing, but it's not. So does my action change depending on the data? If not, then you should leverage the existing data, continue improving and iterating with what you have. Benchmark to the KPIs. If you have KPIs, ensure that you're actually correctly following them. But if your data actually changes the actions you're going to take, then, you know, go through another analysis. Is it going to cost a lot of money? Or is it easy to roll back or iterate? What that means is it a one-way door or a two-way door? So an example of this would be, you know, a one-way door basically means once you've made this decision, you cannot come back from it. A two-way door allows you the flexibility to make those changes, view what the results are, and analyze if they align with where you want to be. And if that's not the case, you should be able to roll back and iterate and, you know, implement new solutions. The scientific method. So one of the cool things about being a product manager is you also get to play scientist. You don't have to have a PhD, but you can always, and you already do these steps. You know, we have a purpose for our products. We do the research, we hypothesize, and, you know, figure out what we want to do and how we can go about doing it. We experiment and test. We analyze the results from those tests or experimentations, and then we plan and execute after coming to our conclusions. So in order to begin setting your right metrics on product goals early, it's very crucial to think like a scientist. So you hypothesize, define a test, and then measure your success. And we can do the same thing by setting our goals, setting our metrics, and measuring them. So even without a solid customer data, it's easier to create that hypothesis and see if the target is ideal. And even if you, in the end, the conclusion is that this thing doesn't work, going through the entire life cycle gives you valuable key insights into various things. So for example, how do your business stakeholders think? How does your team function? How do your developers feel about implementing something? Do they come up with, you know, better implementations, better idea? Can they code faster if, for example, you had another set of frameworks or APIs or libraries for them? So not just thinking about it, but implementing it becomes very crucial. And it also helps you kind of identify challenges because you're one person. You can't think about every single thing that needs to go into your product. But talking to various people, various personalities with various life and professional experiences gives you a bigger pool of data to work from. So the scientific method, I believe, is pretty cool. Are you measuring the right things? So going back to one of the first title slides I showed, big data is crucial, but we should not focus way too much on just our KPIs or metrics unless we know why we're doing it. So it's very important for product managers to focus on what matters, and that's actually why we're here. As I said earlier, the metrics that you're focusing on, your focus metrics, should tie directly to your company's objectives, either for your product or the company itself or for you personally. They should be simple and measurable, as we looked at in the SMART metric framework, and they should hope to solve a customer's problem. The metrics that you choose will vary. So if you're a mobile application versus a content website versus a SaaS model product. So the metrics themselves will change phases, but they, as long as you follow the right steps and you identify that these are the things I need to focus on, you will be on a path to success. And hopefully you will avoid vanity metrics. So these are metrics which look good, but they're usually not actionable. So an example would be the number of Facebook likes you got on a picture in your application. It doesn't really drive business decisions, and it doesn't tie to the business results or your customer success. So don't fall into the vanity metrics because they're easy. All right, so I'd also like to look at some of the metrics examples, and we'll also look at, you know, various different kinds of products. So these are going to be some of the terms that you've heard a lot in the general product metrics conversations. NPS, the Net Promoter Score. So it is, usually you would start by asking your customer or your app user, how likely are you to recommend my product or my brand or my company to a friend, right? You have your detractors, you have your promoters. A subtraction of those, that's what your NPS is. Revenue, it's pretty self-explanatory, the amount of revenue your product has generated. The next is actions. So these are going to be specific to your product, and these are usually measured over time. So for example, you allow your customers to, you know, play a game where they can come back every single day and it resets. So the number of times your users take those actions means they're coming back and using your product. So that's a measurable action that you can look at. MRR, monthly recurring revenue. That's the amount of revenue which is generated every month. It can be sliced, you know, by different dimensions. So you can have MRR in terms of the number of staff, the number of users, the number of features, et cetera. If it's an API, for example, the MRR per API call. We can also look at churn. So churn is the customers who didn't like you and stopped using your product. So typically it's measured over a month, and it's very critical for example, a monthly subscription model product, because it kind of determines the overall app health and helps you measure that. So if you have a high churn rate, it means you're losing customers, which means you need to figure out what to fix so you can stop that. Cost per acquisition, it's something that a lot of marketing or sales teams look at. It's basically how much it costs you to acquire a customer. Things like, you know, campaigns or development fees, etc., that go into developing, promoting, and selling a product are what contribute to the acquisition costs. The lower this cost per acquisition, the better. One way, obviously, would be to increase the number of customers that you have. All right, moving on to referrals. Again, how viral is your product? That helps you kind of, you know, use that exponential growth and reduce the cost per acquisition and increase your revenues. And finally, we have the lifetime value. That's the value of a customer over their lifetime using your product. So it's, you know, pretty easy to understand basically how much value are you deriving from your customers. So these are some of the general product metrics that you'll see thrown around that you will definitely be working on and measuring in your roles. But let's look at some more specific examples. So for example, you have, you know, API products, which would look at things like API calls, how many requests were sent, how many responses were received, and prove that your API is being used. Because a higher API call means that people need that API and they're going to use it. This also kind of helps you answer questions or figure out solutions for scaling. So is your product being used, and is your API scalable? The other thing that ties into it is the failure rate. If your API is being used a lot, but it's also failing a lot, that's not going to be scalable, and you need to figure out solutions for it. Failure rate, again, pretty self-explanatory. How many API calls are failing? So you want to prove to your stakeholders or your customers that you are there to support them, that you are on top of your game, and if you can track it, you will measure it. And if you measure it, you will improve it. So that's why, again, going back to the point of this entire presentation, it's very important to identify how you can improve upon things by figuring out the right metrics to measure. Actions per month, that's going to be how many actions does your API perform in a month. So for example, you have APIs which send out text messages or notifications, play music track, send an email, things like that. So how many actions are being taken using your APIs? Moving on, revenue. I'm going to skip on that because I've talked about it a lot. We all love money, but it's pretty easy. Actions will directly tie to your revenues because the more actions you take or your APIs used to take, the higher your revenue would be because, you know, a lot of API products are based on per API call costs. Support tickets. How many users are having problems with using your product? Is it because of a lack of resources, lack of documentation, lack of clear documentation? All those things will increase the number of support tickets that you will receive, which again increases the cost to maintain that product because you'll need to hire more support folks. You will spend more time answering those calls and solving them. If the number is too high, you have to dig in, you have to resolve it. I think this is one of the often overlooked piece because API products are used by your developers. They're going to talk about it, they're going to Google or Stack Overflow it, but if they're driving your support tickets, then that means there's something definitely missing. Uptime, downtime, you know, how good is your server doing? how bad is your API doing? Just the uptime and downtime for that. Moving on, it's client retention. So how many of your API users are coming back and using your APIs? Do they still find value from it? Retention is an indicator of, you know, how useful or how much impact your API is having on their businesses. And obviously, the golden metric, customers, how many customers you have? Because we all love customers as well, as much as we love revenue. All right. Another example we can look at is mobile applications. So some of the metrics that mobile app product managers care about are downloads, because it's a numbers game. The more downloads you have, the higher the chances of people follow or customers following through on the rest of the framework features that you looked at. If you have a lot of downloads, you're going to have a higher number of activations. Hopefully, you will have, you know, not a lot of uninstalls. Daily active users. One example of daily active users where you can, you know, identify a daily active user or define it is logins. So login means you've just pulled up the application and logged into it. But that doesn't really give you much information of whether or not that person was an active user. For example, for me, I would define a daily active user as someone who logged in and then took maybe one key action from a list of actions. Maybe they logged in and they checked their notifications. Maybe they, for example, pulled up one of the features. Did they spend time scrolling through your application? How many taps or which areas were they tapping into? So it's very crucial to identify or describe and define how you define your active users, because again, that drives your daily, monthly active users, which impacts a lot of these metrics. Session length, as I mentioned, the length of the session of how long a customer spent inside your application. This is impacted by a few things. So for example, if you have content which takes a long time to render, that could increase the session length, but then you have to figure out why are customers staying for too long on one page of your application. Are you allowing them, for example, if it's a shopping application, if the session length after they have added the items to the cart is too long, is it because how you've implemented the checkout method needs to be improved upon? Session interval. This would be the time gap between when they last opened the application and then when they open it again. So this gives you an insight of like how sticky your application is. So for example, with Facebook, you know, it used to be much, much stickier, in my opinion, because you would go in and people always stay inside the app, they would kill it and open it back on their web browser. But session interval kind of gives you an idea of the stickiness and how you can improve upon it. Maybe you need to refresh the app and bring in more features. Maybe have them, you know, turn on their push notifications so that they're reminded of going into your application. Ratings obviously matter a lot on the mobile application. You have your Google Play Store, Apple Play Store. You see the 5-star, great. You see the 2.8, not so great. And ratings and actually reviews go hand in hand, because if a customer is not happy, there are high chances that they will complain about it in a public forum, which in this case would be the app ratings or reviews. All right, so the last one that I wanted to look at is the subscription or software as a service model. So for this, again, we'll go through the acquisition engagement. They're missing the activation, but it's kind of hand in hand between acquisition and engagement. You have referral and retention. So cost per acquisition, as I explained before, how much money are you spending on acquiring your customers? Leads would be, you know, how many people are coming into your application. You can define the lead, but that would basically be monitoring the number of people interested in your product. And how they show that interest depends on you and how you want to define that. So for example, for me, you know, if I was someone who has an ebook subscription, like people who have downloaded the ebook, or maybe they subscribe to your emails, maybe they clicked on the little contact us for more information button. So those are your leads. These are people who have shown an interest, but they're not your customers yet in most cases. Visit to lead percentage, obviously. The number of those visitors or leads that you saw and who, or sorry, the number of visitors that you had on, for example, your content website versus the number of people who actually became leads, and how many of them would eventually turn into active customers. Visit to subscription, same thing. How many of those leads that you have now, going from visitors to leads, have actually become subscribers of your software or your subscription? The lifetime value of a subscriber, it's similar to what we have looked at so far, the number of or the amount of revenue each subscriber brings to your service. So LTV kind of gives you an idea of the long-term health of your product and how it's performing. And it's easier to do it like on a common scale. So if you're acquiring customers, for example, at a cost of $5,000 and your LTV is $4,000, doesn't really make sense, right? Subscription package breakdown. Which subscription packages or services are more popular? So for example, if you have the Dollar Shave Club, which subscription is being sold more? And there's obviously with these models, there's a chance of add-ons. So another example that you could use is Quip toothbrushes. So you can have the initial gift, the box itself, like the initial product, but you can have a subscription which is add-on, which gives you a new head of toothbrush as well as toothpaste. So that takes the thought out for your customer, and it's kind of a new gift that you have gifted yourself. That's actually one of the reasons why subscription boxes became so huge in the past. This also, yeah, so again, explore bundling opportunities if you have, you know, different kinds of toothbrushes for the family. If you buy them together, you're going to get a better deal, things like that. Churn rate, again, the number of customers or the percentage of customers who end up leaving your product or canceling the subscription. Looking at actions per month, number of actions that they take per month. And again, these can be identified and defined by you. So for example, you know, if you have Shopify, how many users are printing the labels? How many times are they printing them? Are they printing, you know, just shipping labels, or are they also printing flyers or brochures? Percentage of activations, the number of people who activated their subscription, where activated is obviously defined by you. So in subscription products, this could mean anything. It could be, you know, they activated the first free trial week, or they paid for their next 3 months in advance. It again depends on the product manager and the key stakeholders driving this metric. Percentage active users, same idea, the number of people actively using your product, and that helps you measure the engagement of your subscribers. And it can also help you preempt cancellations if you notice how many users have lapsed. Maybe they didn't want to put in their credit card information, and then they forgot about it when it came time to renew. So if you can reach out to them and identify those gaps, you can increase the percentage of active users. And lastly, again, monthly recurring revenue. So you want, especially with a subscription model, your monthly recurring revenue that you get from each customer generates is super, super critical, because that's what pays for everything for you. Your monthly revenue as a subscription model would be very pertinent. All right. And again, as a product manager, always improvise, adapt, and overcome, because you can.
This podcast is made possible by Optimizely. To learn more about how you can get started with progressive delivery and experimentation, visit www.optimizely.com.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.